You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Hello, friends. Welcome back into Unpacking the Gospel. Mike Allen here with my good friend Lavinia Spirito, and we're going to be looking at the gospel reading for the fourth Sunday in Ordinary Time, January 29th, 2017. And the reading for today, if you have a Bible or a New Testament in front of you, or you can pull it up online, the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 5, verses 1 through 12a, known more familiarly as the Beatitudes, beginning of the Sermon on the Mount.
And having just come back from Israel last month, we actually had Mass on the Mount of the Beatitudes, which is a pretty high hill. I don't know if I would say it's a mountain, but it's a very, very high hill, very steep. And actually, in order to get up the mount, you have to switch from a bus, which we were in, to cars, because it's so steep that buses can't make it all the way up. Another thing that strikes you when you go to the Mount of the Beatitudes is the fact that when you are there, you always imagine maybe Jesus standing at the top of the mountain speaking down, but probably the acoustics of the deal are probably more like he was standing in the middle or at the bottom of the mountain speaking up. And the acoustics are so good that if you're still on that mountain, by still I mean quiet, you can actually hear the voices of people speaking on the Lake of Galilee, which is really far. I mean, it's like, you know, the Mount of Beatitudes, and then there's a shore, and then there's a Lake of Galilee, but it's pretty far away. You can see the big body of water, but you can't distinguish the voices, but you can hear them. So it speaks to the beautiful acoustics of that place before microphones.
It's also, I think, helpful here. And gosh, Lavinia, every time I talk to you, I want to go to the Holy Land. So
yep.
Bucket list.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, when we understand, you know, Matthew's gospel, of course, we're in year A of the lectionary. And so it's the first gospel, the Gospel of Matthew, which we've talked about before, oftentimes, theorized to be written primarily for Jewish Christians, Jewish believers. One of the themes that is often mentioned in Matthew's gospel is that Jesus is portrayed as the new Moses.
Mm-hmm.
We see the genealogy to begin the gospel. You have Jesus coming, of course, out of Egypt. You've got the slaughter of the innocents, much like you had with Moses and the Pharaoh, so many things. And you've got the time in the wilderness and so forth. So Jesus goes up on a mountain. We can associate that perhaps with the law of Mount Sinai, the giving of the law, and now we have, in a sense, a new law.
And one thing to keep in mind is that this is a body of stuff that Jesus would have repeated more than once, because Luke places the same speech on the plain. So you have the Sermon on the Mount and the Sermon on the Plain, and they're pretty much the same. So I don't know about you, but Mike, if you do speaking, there are certain stock things that you always say, right? And I think these might be stock things that Jesus said quite a few times.
So it's not necessarily that Matthew wrote his gospel entirely chronologically.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Placed things thematically and so forth.
Neither did any of the synoptic
Talk about the significance of that he sat down, right? Sitting was a sign of authority.
Sitting to teach was a sign of authority. We're doing the letter to the Hebrews right now, and I'm knee deep into what it means to stand in the sanctuary and what it means to sit in the sanctuary. In a few words, nobody sat in the sanctuary. The priests, including the high priests, were always standing when they were in the sanctuary, in the holy place, right outside the Holy of Holies, preparing sacrifice, offering incense, blessing the people, all the things they were doing. They were constantly moving to and fro, standing up. Jesus, it says in the letter to the Hebrews, comes into the sanctuary, in a sanctuary not made by human hands, and offers himself as a sacrifice, and then sits down at the right hand of the Father. So this is even more kind of emphasizing Jesus's role, not only as teacher, but as Son of God.
And then, so after he sat down, his disciples came to him when he saw the crowds. And you may ask, why the crowds? Well, all you have to read is the last verses before chapter 5. If we remember, the chapter divisions are are not part of the original text, right? They were done later.
And
so
in the Middle Ages, yes.
You see, just before this, Jesus' fame has begun to spread. He went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel, healing every disease. His fame spread throughout all Syria. They brought him all the sick, those afflicted with various diseases, demoniacs, epileptics, paralytics. It must have been quite the chaotic scene of those who gathered for Jesus. And so seeing the crowds, he went up on the mountain and he opened his mouth and he taught them, saying, and then Jesus proceeds to utter some of the most
perplexing,
countercultural ideas in the history of humanity, mm-hmm. honestly, mm-hmm. That strike so at odds with what we consider to be the blessed life.
Mm-hmm. I know, right? This, if anything, this kind of runs pretty much against the gospel of prosperity, you know, the word of faith movement in some circles that say that unless, if you're blessed by God, you're going to have a Cadillac or a, you know, a Mercedes or a nice car or whatever. And instead, Jesus starts out saying something pretty startling. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Now, mind you, he's not coming out saying blessed are the poor. Being poor in spirit is a quality of tenderhearted and of purity of heart, which can obtain whether you're poor in material goods or wealthy in material goods. In other words, poor in spirit really can be equated with purity, purity of heart, purity of intentions, purity of motives. And, you know, it's easier for people to read this and say, poor in spirit, meaning what? Just only the poor are blessed? No. That's not what he means, because there can be miserly poor and generous wealthy people, right?
And I think, you know, even the word blessed here, and I'm not an etymologist or a linguist, but I think the Greek word here,
makarios
for blessed, mm-hmm. is not so much the idea of some sort of divine favor from without. It is more of a word of, it can't be translated perfectly, but fortunate, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. fortunate are you.
How happy, some translations put, how happy are you?
How happy are you if, you know, I've always thought of like, blessed are the broken. I mean, because those who are, you know, on the one hand, you've got, yes, humility, tenderness, but I think in the context of the types of people that we've already seen Jesus ministering to, the very people that would have been seen as having a great poverty in who they were, whether it was financial poverty or physical poverty or sociological poverty, relational poverty, these are the very ones that Jesus declares are among the blessed ones, mm-hmm. the ones who are fortunate.
Mm-hmm. And in that culture, to be poor was not to be blessed.
Right.
In that culture, to be wealthy evinced a blessing of God. And it's, in fact, speeches like this that Jesus gives that kind of turn that whole thing on their head. Remember in Luke, he has to kind of unpack that kind of attitude out of their minds. He says, what about the people upon whom the tower in Siloam fell?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are they said to have sinned? Because they would equate people dying young, misfortune, stuff like that, to sin. And therefore, God's blessing corresponded to wealth and to health, and sin corresponded to death and destruction and all that stuff. And so Jesus comes and says, hey, wait a minute.
Mm.
You know, it's not because of their sins.
Right.
Or the ones whom Pilate mixed their blood with their sacrifices.
Unless you repent, you too will perish. You know, of course, one of the things I always keep in mind when I read Scripture is that though circumstances may change, cultural conditions, human nature does not. And so the affirmation of the popularity of the wealthy, the successful, that not just in the first century,
mm-hmm.
we do the same thing. I mean, we just elected a winner. You know, we like winners, mm-hmm. you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We like those with wealth, with talent, with beauty, with power, all those things. That's our culture adores, every culture in its own way adores that. This is really such a, we have to be careful, I think, not to, I think we can have this tendency with Scripture to over-spiritualize mm-hmm. things. What Jesus said was so revolutionary, so challenging to their assumptions that it's really even hard to fathom.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's no wonder we're still talking about it, you know, 2,000 years later. And everybody seems to have their own opinion. Obviously, there's church teaching and there's the fathers of the church and there's, you know, the officially accepted interpretation is exactly kind of what we're trying in our own modest way to put forth, that even though it has been interpreted to mean that the poor are blessed, it's not necessarily the case. It's the pure in spirit, the pure-hearted, those who groove in their lives habits of holiness and of reaching out to God. You know, it's that whole kingdom living thing, I think, that he's referring to.
Well, and then he said, it continues, blessed are they who mourn, which is almost like saying, happy are the sad.
Mm-hmm. Which is not what he's saying.
Right. But it is a mourning. I mean, it is a, in other words, what was Jesus' primary subject that he preached? It was the kingdom of heaven,
mm-hmm.
right? Who was the kingdom coming to? The kingdom was coming to the poor in spirit. The kingdom was coming to those who mourn. The kingdom was coming to the meek. The kingdom was coming to those who hunger and thirst for it. Oftentimes, in our pride and self-sufficiency, there is a lack of openness to the breaking in kingdom that the desperate and the poor would have heard.
Well, especially when we're commanded to mourn.
Right.
Blessed are the mourn. Now, why should we mourn? Should we be depressed all the time? No, that's not what he's talking about. It's mostly blessed are those who take a sober assessment of their own human condition and sinfulness and mourn over their sins. I would think that's primarily what we're seeing. We're seeing the sinful condition of the world and the and our own sinful condition, and those are the conditions for mourning.
We'll be back in just a minute. We'll continue on in this conversation again. We're on the fourth Sunday of Ordinary Time, the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 5, verses 1 through 12a, the Beatitudes at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount. This is Mike Allen, my good friend Lavinia Spirito. We'll be back in just a minute on Unpacking the Gospel here on Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Hello and welcome to Unpacking the Gospel. This is Lavinia Spirito with my good friend Mike Allen here in the studio. And we are unpacking the readings for the fourth Sunday in Ordinary Time. And it is taken from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 5, verses 1 through 12. And we're talking about the Beatitude. And we were just, Mike, before the break, unpacking a little bit about what being blessed as being poor in spirit and what mourning means. But, you know, I love how the lectionary is put together. Zephaniah, the reading, the Old Testament reading, it kind of unpacks that a little bit. Seek justice, seek humility. What does it say? They shall do no wrong and speak no lies. There found in their mouths a deceitful tongue. There shall not be found in their mouths a deceitful tongue. I mean, it kind of gives you a little bit of a people who is humble and lowly. That is kind of the kind of Old Testament virtue that Jesus is referring to.
I remember there was a book I read a few years ago called The Jesus I Never Knew. I think Philip Yancey was the writer, not a Catholic, an evangelical.
He's a good writer. I like him.
Yeah, and you know, reading his book now as a Catholic, I mean, there's some things I would disagree with. But one of the things he said when he was teaching a class one time, I can't remember if it was college students, I think, he had them read the Sermon on the Mount, you know, and basically told them, I want you to read this as if you've never heard of Jesus before, you know, and what your reaction would be in reading this. And he said he was really surprised at the reaction. The primary reaction was one of anger.
Hmm.
They were very, you know, some of the things that Jesus said in here, you know, and we'll get into it more deeply into the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus talks about, you know, lust in the heart and some things like that. But even these beginning Beatitudes, again, because it, I mean, this is not, we dress it up, we spiritualize it, we, you know, through the lens of church history. But these words that Jesus said were so radical in terms of, you know, what is it that is the blessed life?
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of what perhaps, you know, we experience in terms of who are the people we envy, who are the people we admire. They're the people oftentimes who are the exact opposite
of these qualities.
Of these qualities, right.
The people we vote for.
Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness.
Wait, you skipped the meek.
Oh, I didn't. I'm sorry. Blessed are the meek.
Blessed are the meek.
I've already got meekness down, Lavinia.
You do,
I didn't
huh?
need to talk. Yes. I'd stack my humility up against anyone's.
Yeah. Whenever we get to this, though, I always I take a term from the horse business, and that is you. Some people will speak when they're going to break a horse. They talk about meeking a horse.
Oh, wow.
And what they say is, and so let me, I mean, a horse is, you know, a fairly big
yes,
creature.
Powerful.
He's powerful. And that's the same reason why you need to train all dogs or big dogs, because they need to have some guidelines, because it's controlled strength. Being meek is having incredible power and strength, mm-hmm. but being able to keep it under control to use it only for the appropriate purpose.
And, you know, of course, Jesus here may as well be describing himself.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Powerhouse that he is.
Powerhouse, you know, the poverty of spirit, the mourning, a man of acquainted with grief and suffering, as Isaiah says. Then blessed are they who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be satisfied. This interior, and this is, you know, one of the things that you see in the Gospels, really across all the Gospels, is how pleased and sometimes even amazed Jesus is with a sort of desperate faith.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, in a certain sense, I think the way I look at desperate faith is like, Jesus, I don't have any answers. Jesus,
right.
I don't have any strength. Jesus, I'm a sinner. Help me, Lord. You know, I think that's the most pleasing prayer right there. Lord, help my unbelief. Lord, help my doubts. Help my fears. Help my humanity. And I think that's kind of where the Lord wants us to be, in that posture of hungering and thirsting for righteousness, first and foremost in ourselves, and then in the world.
Hmm. I love that, you know, a couple of years ago, I read Thomas Merton's spiritual autobiography, Seven Story Mountain, and he talks about a conversation he had not long after he had become a practicing Catholic, and he was having a conversation with a friend of his who was sort of a lapsed Jew, wasn't mm-hmm. even a Catholic, and that his friend asked him, he said, of course, his friend would later convert, but his friend said, what do you want to be? What do you want to do with your life, Thomas? And he said, well, I suppose I want to be a good Catholic. And he said, no. He said, you should want to be a saint.
Mm-hmm. That's the lapsed Jew speaking.
Yeah, he said, you should want to be a saint. He said, the only thing required to be a saint is to want to be one.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's very good.
Yeah, very, very good.
That's a great quotation.
Anyway, so then we go on, blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. We've just come off a year of mercy from the Holy Father. Mm-hmm. Most of us, truth be told, want mercy for ourselves, and
but
we want justice for others.
That's right. Yeah, don't desire justice for yourself or for others, really, because if God were to use the meter of justice upon us all, who could stand? And that's why justice and mercy, in a certain way, are sides of the same coin.
Would it be fair to say, Lavinia, you know, as Jesus comes forth, you know, proclaiming, preaching the kingdom that is breaking into the world in him, a herald and embodiment of the kingdom, that you might look at the Beatitudes here as sort of, these are the values of the kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
This is the ethos of the kingdom,
mm-hmm.
of
this
what the kingdom is.
The new law, the mm-hmm. new covenant law, the kingdom law. And it would be worth kind of sitting down and distilling the qualities and the commandments in here,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, practical applications. Showing mercy, you know, it's the chesed in the Hebrew, that word, that merciful, loving kindness, encouraging love, that love that puts other people first, that loves that makes us lay our lives down for one another in a kinship, covenantal sort of bond sort of way. And I think that's the kind of mercy that he is talking about.
Blessed are the clean of heart, the pure of heart, for they will see God. This is a reflection, really, of the psalm. You know, I think it's Psalm
50.
You know, who will ascend the hill of the Lord and who will stand in his holy place?
Okay.
The one who has clean hands and a pure heart. It's this idea that, you know, and this is at the heart of the beatific vision, is this understanding that we will not see God in his glory until we have been made pure of heart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then it makes me think also of David, I think, is it Psalm 50? You know, de profundis, from the depths, I cried out unto you, O Lord, mm-hmm. like this. And then he says, and though my sins are like scarlet, you have cleansed them, like they will be as white as wool. There's that idea of cleaning, of cleansing, of being cleansed, of being purified.
Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. I heard an interesting reflection on this, that you'll notice it doesn't say blessed are the peace keepers, mm-hmm. but blessed are the peacemakers.
Mm-hmm. Those who make for peace.
Who make for peace. So it's not a passive mm-hmm. sort of thing. It is by God's grace creating peace. Of course, Jesus himself, the Prince of Peace. We always have to consider it in context. Mm-hmm. Because within the context of the whole canon, because of course Jesus also said he came not to bring peace, but
to bring the sword,
division.
Obviously, peace, shalom, is really, you know, he was speaking in Aramaic most likely, and there's that concept of peace that Paul talks about, of that passes all understanding. So it's not an earthly peace. It's not a let's just hope and keep our fingers crossed that things happen. It's not an absence of conflict. Mm. It's actually the peace that originates from a right relationship with God.
And then he says, talks about blessed are they who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when they insult you and persecute you and utter every kind of evil against you falsely because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward will be great in heaven. So in some ways, a foreshadowing of what's to come. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I just saw the film Silence, read the book mm-hmm. Silence, persecution, torture for the faith. It really takes faith to see one as blessed in the midst of that.
You know, in the daily liturgy of the hours, it was the feast of St. Vincent of Saragossa, deacon, and then the day before that, it was the feast of St. Agnes, virgin and martyr. And those two people had some particularly gruesome forms of martyrdom visited upon them. If you read Augustine's sort of excerpt on Agnes and what she went through when she was just only 12 years of age, it just makes you just want to say, oh my gosh, you know, I mean, what would we do? You know, what would I do if confronted with something like that? And I'm always comforted, because it does say, blessed are you when they insult you and persecute you and utter, and then elsewhere it will go on to say, and don't worry about what you will say or what mm-hmm. you are to say, because the words will be given to you. Because what that means is that God will give us the grace to do the unlikely, the impossible, if only we step up and make ourselves available to do so.
And then it says, of course, rejoice and be glad, for your reward will be great in heaven. You know, one of the things I think that was a developing idea among the Jews was this understanding of, you know, when is justice going to come? Is it going to come in this life, or do they have an apocalyptic view that which isn't right in this world will be made right? That's the sense you get in that last beatitude.
Mm-hmm. For your reward will be great in heaven. But as anybody who's a reader of C.S. Lewis or any just kind of tangential disciple, kind of disciple, knows that our reward is also here on earth, just being a member of the kingdom through the peace that is given to us that transcends all circumstances, and through the own reward that a righteous living is. Mm-hmm. Is we don't just righteously live for the kingdom. We righteously live because that's the way of life, and we were programmed and designed to live a righteous life, not to live a selfish, self-centered, lustful, impure life.
And the beauty is when you receive, you welcome the kingdom, then you receive a foretaste. You're already in the kingdom. You receive a foretaste of that now to be fully revealed at the end of human history. We'll be back next week by God's grace. Mike Allen and Lavinia Spirito here on Breadbox Media. We are unpacking the gospel. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.